You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
38 political protesters in Ethiopia has just been found guilty of charges ranging from armed rebellion to outrage against the Constitution. It's possible they could be sentenced to death. The charges date back to 2005, when hundreds of thousands of Ethiopians took part in demonstrations against alleged fraud and vote rigging by Prime Minister Meles Zenawi. With me now to give us an update on the human rights situation in Ethiopia is Lynn Fredrickson, Advocacy Director for Africa for Amnesty International. She's also a consultant for human rights groups in Africa and Southeast Asia, as well as for diaspora groups. And I'm very pleased to welcome her to today's Underreported. Hello.
Thank you for having me, Leonard.
You have a case of laryngitis?
A little bit, sorry.
Who are the people who have been convicted?
Well, they range. They range from elected parliamentarians to a variety of human rights defenders, including journalists, former professors, some of whom taught in the United States, journalists and others who spoke out after the contested elections in 2005, and most of them have been in prison now for over 18 months.
The contested elections suggest that there were good reasons for people to question the results?
Well, that's still under debate. There have been a lot of disputes by the opposition candidates that they won many more seats than they were allowed to assume. And in fact, some of those who won seats refused to assume those seats in protest for the conditions under which the elections took place. Tens of thousands of people took to the streets in 2005 to protest the elections, and that's at the point at which the Ethiopian government started arresting thousands and thousands of people, including many students, most of whom have been released, but 136 of whom have continued on for trial.
And some were killed as well during the protests, weren't they?
Yes. In fact, there was an independent parliamentary inquiry that has noted that excessive force was used by the government of Ethiopia in response to the protests. Oh, approximately 200 people were killed, and many, many more were injured, approximately 150.
Does anybody have any idea why the Ethiopian government reacted so strongly to the protests?
Well, it's hard to get into the mind of the Ethiopian government, but the assumption is that there was a threat that was perceived on the part of the Ethiopian government after the elections, that the centralized command was not in control as it had hoped to be. It's ironic, actually, because prior to the elections, it was one of the most open environments in Ethiopia had seen in decades. And that's why a lot of the diaspora people, including Dr. Yaqub Haile Mariam, who taught at Norfolk State University, and others came back from teaching abroad to participate in the democracy building in the country. And then sadly, after the elections took place, the government chose to crack down.
These were elections that represented a return to democracy after a terrible dictatorship by Haile Mariam Mengistu, who was called the Butcher of Addis.
Yes, yes.
So is there something ironic here that the people who took power as a result of the toppling of a terrible dictator wound up becoming just as oppressive? I don't know if they're just as oppressive, but also oppressive?
Well, I think the sad irony is that the government of Ethiopia had and still has the opportunity to open political space for its opposition, for its human rights defenders, for civil society. But sadly, right now, they've locked up a good majority of the leadership of these groups. And so it's very hard to make progress on democracy, which is what they say is one of their primary goals. So, yes, there is a sad irony there. But I think it's not at all hopeless, and that there's still an opportunity for the government to turn it around. In fact, Amnesty International has been consistently calling for the immediate and unconditional release of all of these prisoners who are prisoners of conscience, who never advocated any kind of violent means of address against the government. And I think if the government still chose to take that action, that there would be a great opportunity for positive change politically in Ethiopia today.
I understand that some of the people who were just convicted are journalists. So how much freedom of press is there in Ethiopia at the moment?
Press freedom has been significantly limited, and watchdog groups who have been watching Ethiopia call it, I believe, one of the worst press situations, pardon me, in the continent right now, perhaps right after Eritrea's situation. And that means that the press is not able to report accurately on conditions for opposition, for minority ethnic groups, for the situation on the border with Eritrea, about the recent incursion and presence of Ethiopia and Somalia. If they do so, then they're at risk of being arrested, and some people have chosen to leave the country.
And some of the 38 who were convicted in absentia.
Yeah.
So considering the way the rest of the world has reacted, do you think that they're likely to be extradited?
I would hope not. Certainly we would, Amnesty International would encourage all governments in the countries in which these individuals are staying not to abide by any extradition requests. But to my knowledge, none have gone forward. And we're also concerned that these governments not only refrain from acting to support oppression in Ethiopia, but act proactively, take a stand to encourage the government, which is an ally of the U.S. and others, to release prisoners of conscience, but also to ensure that there's a fair trial process according to international standards taking place. There's actually several trials taking place simultaneously in Addis right now, primary CUD or opposition trial, and then there's a second main trial with 13 other individuals, and then there are a couple of more.
And they often, many of them are facing the death penalty. Do you think it's likely that they'll actually be executed?
Well, they are facing the death penalty, so we always have to operate under the assumption that if, because 38 were convicted this week, which was, in fact, a surprise to even the U.S. government, that they could potentially be facing that severe of a penalty. Amnesty opposes the death penalty in all cases around the world. But even short of the death penalty, we believe that the charges against these individuals are felonious. And so whatever sentences they may be facing in a month or so when we expect them to come down, we would hope that there would be pardons or some releases immediately.
My guest is Lynn Fredrickson of Amnesty International. We're talking about the current political situation in Ethiopia. When the president of Ethiopia, Wolde Georges, was a guest on this show, he told me that he fills a role similar to Queen Elizabeth in England. So is it Prime Minister Meles Zenawi who wields all the power in the country?
Well, I can't say that he wields all the power in Ethiopia. In fact, I would like to believe that the responsibility also lies with the officials that surround him, as well as those who work in the court system, which is clearly not operating in an independent manner at this time. But he certainly wields a significant amount of power, and I think part of the problem right now is that the United States has become too dependent, or allowed itself to be perceived as too dependent, on the political relationship of a complex nature that's been developed with Ethiopia on the Horn, and therefore we inadvertently contribute to the authority that he wields against his own civilian population.
Well, he's not just a darling of many leaders and donors in the Western world. He's also one of the leaders of the African Union.
Well, he is, and I think, therefore, he should be expected to live up to certain standards of leadership in the region. And given what's recently happened with Ethiopia's participation with the transitional government in Somalia in ousting the courts union and going into Mogadishu and the subsequent civilian casualties and massive displacement from that region, that he's not doing a good job either inside of the country or externally in the region right now.
Well, when he was elected to chair the executive committee of NEPAD, the New Partnership for Africa's Development, I'm assuming he saw that as a vote of confidence from the African Union.
That would be my concern as well. I think that every time we endorse an action in one direction that he may be taking, that we inadvertently encourage him to continue repressive actions that he's taking internally. I think part of the problem right now is that we look at the Horn of Africa, we see the chaos in Somalia, and the U.S. government looks to Ethiopia to help solve that situation, while simultaneously ignoring what is a deteriorating political situation within the country itself, it politically becoming more unstable, and primarily because its own population of talented and devoted civil society leaders is either arrested or has left the country.
Many people in the West applauded when Ethiopia went into Somalia. And now the government has claimed that it was acting in self-defense against Islamic extremists in Somalia. Do you see any truth in that?
Well, I think that whatever justification the government of Ethiopia uses, the reality is that its actions have had the opposite response of the one that they may have wished for, and that the people of Ethiopia are anxious, to say the least, for them to withdraw from the country, that many groups within the country will not participate in an inclusive governance building process until Ethiopia withdraws, that they're perceived as occupiers, and that the actions that they've taken along with the TFG have cost the lives of many people and displaced a third of the population in the area of Mogadishu. So I can't see where that's having any positive effect on the regional stability or the stability or the border security for Ethiopia as well.
The Amnesty International website encourages people who care about the situation, the political prisoners, to write politely worded letters to the Prime Minister, urging him to release political prisoners. Why politely worded?
Well, I think it's always important for us to be diplomatic when we're addressing diplomats of the country involved. I would also, by the way, encourage individuals in the U.S. to write to the U.S., the Ethiopian ambassador to the United States, as well as directly to Meles Zenawi. The reason is that we believe that there is a... there is something to be gained by Meles Zenawi and the Ethiopian government as well. What we're doing is we're making a reasoned argument for them to release individuals who have been arrested and held and tried in Ethiopia. And we do believe that we can still appeal to rationality and the humanitarian nature of that government. And we believe that if many people do that simultaneously, many U.S. citizens and citizens around the world, for instance, say, Mesfin Waldemariam, this is a man who actually formed the Ethiopian Human Rights Council. Why is he in jail? Why can't you release him? That eventually we will see some positive response.
Last December, an Ethiopian court convicted the former Ethiopian dictator, Haile Mengistu, of genocide. What does that conviction mean? He's not likely to be punished, is he? Because he's in exile in Zimbabwe,
right.
And as long as Robert Mugabe is in power, he'll never be extradited.
Right. Well, he is in exile. I don't know how much it means, practically speaking, that Mengistu has been sentenced. I know that they're appealing the sentence and that trial will be ongoing, the so-called Red Terror trial in Ethiopia, as they consider the appeal. But I think, symbolically speaking, it was important because this is a trial that went on for many years, certainly didn't adhere to speedy trial practices. But in the end, the conviction meant a great deal to the people who suffered at the hands of the previous government. Both the current government and civilians who suffered, and we're talking about tens of thousands of people, so I do believe that that had an important symbolic and political effect.
Is Ethiopia still suffering from the legacy of Mengistu?
I believe it is, but I think it's also suffering from the fact that the current government has not been able to build a strong foundation, democratic foundation, a foundation of institutions that will protect the basic human rights of peoples, not only the opposition candidates, but also the minority groups around the country in Ethiopia. It's a very big country with many different groups, the Oromo, the Somalis in the Ogaden, the Anahuac in Gambela. All of these groups need to be taken into the process, and their rights need to be respected equally with those who are in the central area of Addis.
I'm talking with Lynn Fredrickson, Advocacy Director for Africa for Amnesty International and a consultant for human rights groups in Africa and Southeast Asia. The BBC recently reported that there's a lot of new development in Addis Ababa, partly driven by diaspora Ethiopians who have lots of cash to invest. Are diaspora Ethiopians an important political force in post-Mengistu Ethiopia?
I really believe they are. The remittances, economically, they're very important to the development and to the livelihood of their families and communities on the ground. But I also think that they wield a great deal of power in the United States as constituents of their members of Congress, whom they actively lobby for positive policy shifts on the part of the U.S. government. And I think that their voices are heard more and more, and that the more that they become a coordinated set of voices focused on human rights issues rather than perhaps more focused previously on concerns about political differences or party differences, that the more they become focused as a rather united voice on the need to protect human rights, the stronger their impact will be.
Have any of them spoken out about what's been happening? Have we seen any arrests or threats like what's happened in Iran and China?
Here in the United States?
No, I mean, if Ethiopian Americans go back, for example.
Yes, yes, yes. In fact, some of those who are currently on trial and some of those who were convicted this week were individuals who had taught here, who were academics, who had gone back because they believed there was an openness, a space for political change, and they were sadly premature in that assumption and were arrested and are facing trial. Many of them are older individuals, some of whose health are not very good. And as I mentioned before, Jacob Hailemariam, Berhanu Nega, and others have either taught or lived in the United States or been active here in voicing their concerns about the conditions in Ethiopia.
Now, we've been talking about political protests that happened in 2005, but in Ethiopia, weren't they in 1997 or so? Because in Ethiopia right now, the year is 1999, and they have big millennium celebrations planned for some time in September.
They do.
What is it, September 11th?
I believe it is, yes.
Just coincidentally.
Yes,
but
just coincidentally.
So how is the Ethiopian calendar different from the calendars of most of the other countries in the world?
Well, Ethiopia is unique in Africa because it wasn't colonized. Ethiopia is often considered the capital of much of the in the historical development of the continent. It has a proud and long history, cultural depth to it that will be celebrated this coming fall. I also believe that this is an opportunity because if the government of Ethiopia can see this as a chance to use a significant anniversary, a highly significant anniversary in its deep history, to make changes that it might have been previously reluctant to do, to take calculated risks with democratic process and human rights conditions, improvement in standards, to really work with the individuals who are currently facing charges but who could become part of a future government, I think that would be an enormous step forward.
Lynn, can we talk about another issue in the news?
Sure.
Amnesty International, has Amnesty International issued a response to the decision by the Vatican to recommend that Catholics no longer support your organization?
I believe that our international secretariat is currently preparing a formal response to that. Our organization as a whole is still in the process of fully formulating our policy on sexual and reproductive freedoms. And I think, unfortunately, that certain groups and individuals in the world have perhaps misconceived the evolving policy and also the point at which we're in the process. So I look forward to future discussions with them, as does the organization as a whole. But for the moment in time, I think we're awaiting our formal response later this week.
Lynn, thank you so much for talking with us. Lynn Fredrickson, Advocacy Director for Africa for Amnesty International, also a consultant for human rights groups in Africa and Southeast Asia.
Thank you. ¶¶